members.
Okay. So I'd like to call this meeting to order. And there's a couple of things that we have to open the meeting with because this is a virtual meeting. And I will read those and then we will go to public comment. As chair of the Pomfret Select Board, I find that due to the state of emergency declared by Governor Scott as a result of COVID-19 pandemic and pursuant to Addendum 6 to Executive Order 01-20 and Act 92, this public body is authorized to meet electronically. In accordance with Act 92, there is no physical location to observe and listen contemporaneously to this meeting. However, in accordance with the temporary amendments to the open meeting law, I confirm that we are providing public access to the meeting by telephone, video, other electronic means, with additional access offered through telephone, video, and other electronic means. We are using Zoom for this remote meeting. All members of the board have the ability to communicate contemporaneously during this meeting through this platform, and the public has access to contemporaneously listen and, if desired, participate in this meeting. Providing public notice of instructions for accessing the meeting, we previously gave notice to the public of the necessary information for accessing this meeting, including how to access the meeting using other electronic and telephone and video means in our posted agenda. Instructions have also been posted on the town website. Providing a mechanism for the public to alert the public body during the meeting if there are problems with access. If anyone has a problem, please just speak and we will recognize you. Continuing the meeting if necessary in the event the public is unable to access the meeting will be continued to a time, place, certain. And that all votes will be, if not unanimous, be done by roll call vote. So, public comment, and what would be nice, where is Steve just on a phone?
No, I'm on the computer.
Okay. Anyway, if indeed I don't notice your hand raising up or something, please, for goodness sakes, just speak, and we'll try and recognize everybody, and hopefully we'll get there. Is there any public comment related to anything not on the agenda? Anyone? Okay, then agenda review. I have one thing that we need to add, and that is Dr. Herman called me yesterday, and he may want to speak to the board regarding a COVID-19 situation, and so I would like to add him before the road foreman's report, and other than that, does anyone have anything else that they wish to add or delete? Any comments? So then I need a motion then to accept the motion as read.
So moved.
So moved.
Was that you, Steve?
That was.
I'll second that. We need to do this, I guess, by roll call. Scott?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Chuck? Chuck? I think your video is off, Chuck. There you go.
Aye. Aye.
Now you're all set. Steve?
Aye.
And I'm an aye. So we've done that. We need to approve the minutes of 3-4 and 3-18 and 4-1. Did anyone look at those things that were added by Scott?
Yeah.
And does anyone have any problems with any of those things? only thing that I have on the 3-4 meeting, at close to the end of the meeting or the end of the minutes, there was a discussion about V-Trans and my authority to sign a document. There was no document to sign. What I asked for approval to put my name on was a list of the various towns and the various contact people. Frank Perrin was on that before, and of course he was no longer either road commissioner or select board member. And at that point, you told me to put myself down as contact of chair of the board, which I did do, and I sent that into V-Trans. And so there was no document to sign. It was just a worksheet, an Excel worksheet that V-Trans sent around to get contact people. And so I think we need to change that accordingly.
Sounds good.
Any other corrections on 3-4?
Audio and video on and off.
I need then a motion.
I'll move that the board approve the March 4th minutes with the edits submitted to the board by Scott Woodward.
Is there a second?
Second that.
All those in favor? If this is a unanimous, we don't have to do a roll call vote. Steve?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And I myself. Now go to the 3:18 minutes. Were there any, was there any discussion there or anything that you wanted to change?
There were a number of which I submitted to everybody. Same thing as March 4th. They were highlighted and annotated, the changes. So everybody should have had a chance to see those changes.
So I need a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor, Steve?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. 4-1 minutes. I believe, Scott, you were going to amend those, and I never got any amendments to that effect. And
yep.
So
I've got some changes.
What I would like to know is, on those changes, we never got those.
Well, what we talked about procedurally is that we would go over the changes at the meeting rather than submitting. You know, the 3-4 and 3-18 minutes were old ones that we agreed at previous meetings that we would submit the changes and come back and talk to them. But previously, what we talked about we would do is that on the most current minutes, if anybody had any changes, we would talk about them at the meeting. But
I thought you were going to submit those that you had, but maybe I misunderstood.
Well, no, I mean, we talked about this before, whether we should circulate the minutes before as a draft and then get the edits over ahead of time, or whether we should just talk about them at the meeting. What I recall is that we said we would just talk about them at the meeting. But I can show everybody. I can bring them up on the screen right now and show everybody what the changes are.
Is that anyone's pleasure? John?
Doesn't make a difference to me.
So a lot of them are, you should be able to see them up on your screen right now. A lot of them are similar kinds of things. You know, just being consistent on if we are listing someone who serves in a town capacity, putting in parentheses what their role is. So, for example, Ben Brickner is off the, he's an auditor member, so we should put that in parentheses. Same thing with Bob Coates. He's a school board member. Some capitalization stuff. I think it's important to note that the sentence here that references Frank having completed the RFP, now that he's not a board member, it should explain that he completed that while he was still serving on the board. On the agenda item changes that we did, I think in general we should be a little bit more descriptive in what the changes are. So, you know, for instance, it just says Chris Bump. That doesn't really tell anybody what we talked about. And then the zoning hearing also, the discussion was around setting the date for the hearing. CD reinvestment was actually a fire department vehicle reserve CD, so that should be clarified. There's some commas and stuff like that. Further down here in paragraph 5A, it's actually COVID-19, not COVID-10. And then even though we are familiar with everybody and name, first names, I think for historical sake, it's important. I highlighted John's name here, but same thing with Jim. It's the road foreman's report, but we know it's Jim Potter. But it's not always clear that it's John Peters, so we should probably specify who the John is in that case. And then further down in 5B, it just says PVS, and while we may all be familiar that that's Prosper Valley, you know, when people go back and read the minutes later, they might not know what PVS means. The rest of this stuff here that you see highlighted in green is something maybe we can talk about in a separate discussion and not hold up approving or editing the minutes here. But one of the things that I think we need to be consistent on is if we're going to include in the minutes a lot of sort of contextual information or contextual commentary that was made about a particular subject, we should be consistent to either always include commentary or not include it at all, because on a lot of subjects we don't include any commentary, but on others there's lots of commentary. But again, I think that's a topic that we can take offline and not gum up talking about the minutes tonight. One point of clarification is that we actually weren't mandated for the 10-day sick leave. That federal law only applies to organizations that are 50 employees or larger. So it doesn't actually technically apply to us, but we still did it anyway, so it was a good thing to do. But it should be clarified that that federal mandate actually doesn't apply to us. That the green is that contextual stuff. Is just past, making it past tense, the TA-60 was tabled to the next meeting. So stuff like that. Those are the nature of the changes. So if everybody got all those changes and is comfortable with them, we can vote on the changes tonight, or we can take it up again next meeting.
So I need a motion to either adopt these or to carry them over to the next meeting. And so I need a motion.
I guess I'll move to approve the minutes with the changes highlighted here.
I need a second. Okay, if no one seconds it, then I assume that we would like to look at these changes and then take them up at the next meeting. Would that be an assumption that would be correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably best. I mean, I don't see anything in there that sticks out to me that isn't correct, but I'd like to look them over, so.
Okay.
I'll amend my that motion failed to get a second, so I'll move that we delay approving these minutes until the next regular meeting.
And could I add a friendly amendment to that motion to indicate that you will send them to us via email ahead of time or include them with the next agenda packet?
Yeah, let's take that as a separate. Let me just amend my own motion so that we don't have to go through the whole amendment process. So I'll withdraw my motion and I will move that we table approval of the 4-1 minutes until the next regular meeting, and that changes will be submitted to the rest of the board for review ahead of time.
Second.
All those in favor of that motion? John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Motion is carried.
So just as a point of clarification, is that how we want to go forward? Is, you know, Cynthia publishes to the website, we look at them from the website, figure out if we want to make any changes, then submit those changes just like I did over the weekend, and do it that way? Is that the process we want to follow?
Seems logical to me.
What's that?
It seems logical to me.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. I have next on the agenda warrants for approval, and I cannot get to those and still be in the meeting screen unless you can tell me how to do that, Scott.
I can bring them up.
Okay. There's a payroll warrant.
Yep.
And accounts payable. Can you bring those up, Scott?
Yeah, I'll bring up the AP one. So we have check warrant 19039.
No, that's way that's
that old.
Yeah, that's 1028.
Okay, hang on a second.
19.
Oh heck, sorry about that. Hang on a second. All right, I think I got the right one now. Warrant 19101, and I think that's the only AP warrant. The total amount of this is $30,172.63.
There's also a payroll warrant.
Yep. I know. I'm not going to bring that one up, though, for just because it's got payroll stuff in it.
That's fine, but we need the amount. You need to read the amount.
Do you want to do them both in the same motion, then?
Unless anyone has problems with them. I looked at both, and they didn't bother. There was nothing on there that stuck out in my mind. But we need to approve them both. Because nobody's been signing those, so she really needs a motion and an approval.
Okay, so we also have payroll warrant 19100 in the amount of $8,327.17.
I move that we pay both the AP warrant and the payroll warrant.
Second.
Any discussion or questions? All of those in favor, say aye. Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Don?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. So now we're going to go to items for discussion or vote. And I'm going to call on Hugh first because he is, he has to be on here and I don't think we need to make him wait for everything else. Hugh, you've got the floor.
Oh, hang on, he might be, hang on a second.
Hugh is muted, so we've got to...
Hang on a sec. He should... Where the heck did he go? Hang on a second. Dr. Herman, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine.
Fine. Briefly, we've got one or two Pomfret folks who do have COVID. The one I know best is doing very well. He's on house quarantine. No problems. I'm not sure about the other one. As you know, Kevin Rice, our emergency coordinator, has done a great job. Once again, he's got a list of Pomfret folks who may need help. Most of these are still all right. Those are my only comments, but if any of you have any questions before I go off the air, please ask them. That's the main reason I thought I'd drop in. So questions if you have any.
Dr. Herman, this is Scott Woodward. Are you hearing from any folks who feel like they need assistance?
No, I think Kevin is more likely to hear. On Cloudland Road, we're like a large family, and we have been helping one another with groceries, but not with any health items.
Okay.
Do you have any questions, John? Anybody?
I don't.
No.
And you got that situation that you called me about yesterday squared away? You?
Yes, that Pomfret person decided to follow guidelines. He's home, staying in his bedroom. He's going to be quarantined. No more problems.
Excellent. Okay, any other questions of you? Anybody? You've got several people muted here, Scott, or they muted themselves, I'm not sure which. But unless they're on my screen, I don't know whether they wish to talk or not.
Yeah, what I asked everybody to do is if they need to speak, to unmute themselves and speak up.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much, Hugh, for calling in. We appreciate it, and we're glad you're keeping on top of things.
All right. Thank all of you for what you do. I'll say good night. Thanks.
Thank you.
Stay healthy. Road Foreman's report.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. How are you?
You hear me?
We can
hear you.
Okay. So, number one, we've been social distancing. We're still working, keeping our distance. I've been running the Grippier. Art's been running one truck. And Justin running his truck. So, we've been kind of working through it that way. We did start raiding out on the south end. So we've gotten Sugar Bush Farms and River Road and all the roads on that end and a little more cloudland taking through. We've switched over now to 4 10-hour days. The tree company that came in to remove the trees on the Bounty Road for the power company and Tow Hill for the power company, they're done. They have removed them trees. Now we're just going to go around and get them picked up. Then go through that here. And then as they were There was a big, huge dead pine tree that was out behind the garage, right up behind there in the power lines. So they asked me if they could leave their truck down there, and I said, yeah, the tree service guys did. So at the end, I said, do you guys mind doing me a favor removing that tree since I left your truck here? And they were fine with it. So we got rid of that big, huge pine tree that was leaning out of the garage. They took it down for it. And the other question that I have is, what happens to the grant money that we get reimbursed back for? Let's say if I spend the money out of my budget for the culverts, for the Harriet Pack, and we put in there for the town's equipment and whatnot. So let's say some of that stuff that we put into buying the culverts there comes out of my culvert budget. Where does that money go when we get reimbursed back?
That money is going back into income, Jim. And so, for instance, if you did the Rudge Road project and that cost us $40,000, and that grant was a $25,000 grant, we spent $40,000 in money and in materials and in labor to do the job, and we got $25,000 back, and that went back into your highway fund as income.
Okay, but is there any way moving forward from, let's say, because, like, you know, when we purchased the culverts out of the culvert budget for that project, then that depletes me down, brings my budget down further down, so the rest of the town is suffering because I had to put in that grant money for their culverts, and now I can't buy any more culverts because, you know what I'm saying? So that money's out there.
Yeah.
Is there any way possible that money, when it comes back, can be allocated back into them places where it came out of?
Well, you can't allocate it back into, what you're kind of saying is that our actual budget number doesn't take into account the expense for the grant. And that's why it looks like we're drawing down on that line item perhaps more than we should. So I think what you're kind of saying is we would have to increase the expense amount for the line item on culverts so that there's the offset for the income that comes in. It's a timing issue too, though, because it's not always clear when we're going to get that grant receipt back. We may get it in the same fiscal year, we may not. But I think what you're describing, Jim, is that this is a similar situation with other grants where we're not really projecting the income or the expense, and so they're not really captured in the budget. They're only captured in the actuals for the next year.
Would I be better off moving forward, knowing that these projects are going to come up? I know it's kind of puts me behind, I mean, to put into the next year's budget, but as these projects, we see them, foresee them coming in, if I could get a solid number together, then we set that as a separate project?
Yeah, right. So what we used to do, and still sometimes do, is had a special section in the budget for projects. Projects we knew that we were going to do through some grant funding or some other income source. And then the expenses for those projects would be captured there. And it would be sort of an all-inclusive line item, whether it was hard pack or culverts or whatever. There was just like a special line item for Bartlett Road, for example. So that's one way to do it.
Well, I don't want to
go ahead, Jimmy.
I don't want to tie up a bunch of time on it. I just was curious on how that worked, and
yeah,
maybe we could adjust to it and somehow and then see, get better at, you know, seeing what it's going to cost so that it doesn't keep coming into, more or less in my mind, Robin and Peter kind of deal with PayPal.
Right.
Well, you are especially hurting this year because we had to buy that squashed culvert for the end of DeMurrell's Road, and that was really expensive in comparison to what it should have been. But I thought also that we should do, if we're going to do these projects, we have got to be a little more cautious and budget. Because we are only getting reimbursed to 75 or whatever percentage it happens to be on the grant. And even though that does pay for labor, and that's part of the in-kind cost, when you start talking these big culverts, it doesn't make it come out even. And so we should do a better job. You're absolutely correct.
And then the other thing that we discussed and that I brought up with you guys at the last meeting was that Chris Magnin and that crack over him wanting, if he came in and does it this year in May, for the stuff that he was supposed to have gotten done this year. And then in the next year's budget, he would do that as well while he was here and play the billing until after July. Is that something we're interested in? And,
it makes sense to me to have him do it while he's here if we're gonna do it. I mean, that's, then he doesn't have to come back.
I would say yes as well. Especially if we will do it for the same amount of money per whatever day he's charging it from last year's quote.
Well, that I haven't cleared up with him, but I can clear that part up with him. But I just, before I even entertained too much of it, I just wanted to know if it's okay or whether we could do that or not.
Does anyone else on the board have a problem with that?
What I'm not clear about is this a out of budget expense, or is it in line with what we budgeted for FY20?
I believe we budgeted $15,000 for crack sealing in this coming 2021 budget. I would have to check the budget to be sure, but that sticks in my mind. And so part of, if we had him do more than just what we budgeted for last year, which he did not get done because it was too late, then the rest would come out of next year's budget.
So essentially what we're talking about is from executing the work, basically doing it roughly the same time or at the same time, but then the expenditure comes out of two different budget cycles.
Correct.
FY20, FY20. Okay. I mean, it sounds fine to me. It's not the first time we've been in that situation. I guess the only concern I would have, although I think we're going to want to, not to judge anything, but you know, if we're going to prioritize anything, it's going to be highway work. But we, you know, we don't know what kind of budget situation we're going to be in. That would be my only concern. But again,
the only other thing is that when you talk to him, Jimmy, he probably can't be in here until after that stay safe, stay home order is lifted as well.
Yeah, it'd be the end of May at the earliest if it doesn't get extended again. So.
But I certainly don't think it'll do any harm to entertain would he give us the same rate, and then we can make a decision when we know that.
Okay. Yep.
Is that all right with the rest of the board?
Makes sense to me.
What else you got, Jimmy?
Ellen had called me and Emily and wanted me to go up and just kind of look around at the septic there at the office, and so I did. Just walked around in the lids and whatnot. I happened to take notice on the back of the building where the furnace exhaust pipe comes out, that it was kind of moved a little bit, so I went to grab on it. When it did, it's like it's cut off or broke off halfway in the wall. It's not there now. And I put my hand in there, and around in where that pipe is, that insulation and all that stuff was pretty good and warm. So I think somebody probably ought to be taking a look at that.
So that's the vent pipe for the heater?
Correct, yeah. And then above that, there's like I would say maybe the bathroom vent or some kind of a fan vent or something that had like the louver cover over it, you know, that like dryer vent louvers. That's been broke off, and that's gone too. There should be another one of them, because now that's just, that hole's wide open as well.
Okay. What else did you see?
That was pretty much about it. I mean, I took the lid off and I clipped down into the pump well there, and I tripped the alarm just to make sure the alarm worked, and then I pulled up on the pump and made sure the pump was working and the septic went up. So there weren't no issues, there was nothing there. And I didn't find any smell inside, but of course, you can't smell very good anyway. But. Those two things I did notice.
The septic tanks are going to get pumped out tomorrow. Supposed to. Did Ellen ever get a time, Jimmy?
He told me between, I think, 9:30 and 10 o'clock, but I told her, I responded back to an email and told her that I'd be up in the morning and take the two lids off so that they could do whatever they had to do, and then when they were done, we'd come back and put them up.
That sounds great. Anything else you got, Jim?
No, that's about it.
Do you want to discuss this VTRAN's interpretation of the stay safe, stay home order now? Even though that's out of order, I sent all of you board members the stay safe, stay home order and VTRAN's interpretation of that late this afternoon. That got sent around sometime this morning. We have received confirmation from Chris Bump that we cannot do any work on Howe Hill until Scott's stay safe, stay home order is lifted. However, if you read that email that I sent around to you all, they're saying that except for fixing major potholes or failed culverts, we can't have our road crew work at all. Now, Jim says it'll take one more day. If he could get one more day, he could get these roads passable enough so the rain wouldn't wash them out and people could survive with the potholes that are left. So we need a board decision as to whether, and there's various towns, Victoria Littlefield took a survey yesterday, and there's various towns working on this in various different ways, but we need a board decision as to whether we want them to work tomorrow and then not work anymore and just oversee the roads. They'd have to be on call if there's an emergency, or how we want to handle that. And I'm open to any motion and discussion.
Well, I hate to think that we can't take care of the roads, and you know they're gonna, when they dry out, they're gonna be harder to grade. And you know I get all of that, but given that we are a government agency ourselves, I think we really do need to follow the directives by the state as much as I'd like not to. But I do think that that's probably important.
Anyone else?
I wasn't clear about that, John. What, important to follow the guidelines?
Important to follow the guidelines, yeah.
Okay, I was wondering if one more day's work would fall under the category of fixing major potholes.
Well, yeah, I have no problem with tomorrow. I'm just talking long-term moving forward.
When Jimmy and I discussed it earlier today, he said that I thought that to get these major potholes and washboards and just cuff these things off now, and I, at least I know on my road, the water, Jimmy hit this road today, in places it was really pretty bad to the point where the water was kind of eroding the side of the road away. So if he thinks one more day would take care of the major part of it and make the roads passable for emergency vehicles and passenger vehicles, I have no problem giving him the one more day. I think that I agree with John that we're a government agency. They're going to crack down on this. The Attorney General says that he may prosecute if we continue, and I think we have to take that into consideration. But I would move that we let Jim and the crew work one more day, and then that we have them go home and we pay them their salary. And because they're going to be on call, and if we get more major rainstorms like we've had, they're going to have to come in and fix the messes up, or we'll lose the roads. I would move.
I think they should get paid, and I hate to be the person to bring this up, but I do think it needs to be discussed. I'm not bringing this up because I feel one way or the other, but we need to at least explore the possibility of putting some or all of them on furlough, because it will cost us less money in the long run. I'm not saying I'm necessarily in favor of it, but by putting them on furlough, they would be able for unemployment, which is pretty decent right now. And they would still be on call and still would be receiving all the same benefits that they're receiving now. I certainly have mixed feelings myself about it, but given the fact that our money does all come from the taxpayers and everybody's has a real or potential burden from this, we should at least look into it.
I couldn't agree with you more. I don't know the ins and outs of furloughing, and I guess we could I could call VLTC tomorrow and get some kind of guidance on that. I think they need to get paid one way or another.
Yes.
And I certainly don't think, given what we got from V-Trans today, I don't think we can continue to have them work after tomorrow.
No.
We can always have a special board meeting or an emergency board meeting to deal with that if we get the furlough particulars in hand.
Yep.
An emergency meeting we can call on very short notice. A special meeting we can call with 24 hours notice.
Yep.
So there was no second to that motion. How do we want to leave this?
Well, I think if you want to look into it with VLCT and just get some clarification from them as to how it would all work, and we could have another meeting Friday or the beginning of next week, and until then we just continue to pay them like we have been.
I'd like for you to put that in a motion so that we have ourselves covered legally, that they can work through tomorrow to get the roads good enough for people to get through, and then we'll look into the furlough thing and have a special meeting to discuss that when we get the particulars.
Do you want all of that in a motion or just working tomorrow?
Well, we can start with working tomorrow, but we also need to make sure that we indicate that they're going to get paid one way or another, and the details to be worked out
Then I'll make a motion that we have them finish up the road work tomorrow, and then after that they'll be getting paid to stay at home and be on call for emergencies following VTrans guidelines.
I'll second that.
Emily?
Yes, Betsy.
I don't know if the town as a government entity is ineligible for the payroll relief money that's been...
We're not, unfortunately.
We're not. Okay, that's my question.
And none of this is, because this is an emergency situation, and it has to do with this COVID emergency, I did ask Neil to check into, because he's doing the FEMA work, this does not qualify for FEMA reimbursement either. So that is not an option as well. So we have a motion and it was seconded. All those in favor? Doug?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. I will try and get some furlough information or some information from VLCT, and I will send that along to you all, and we can discuss when we can have a special meeting to figure out how we're going to deal with the crew getting paid. Does that sound all right?
Works for me.
Sounds good.
Is everybody in agreement with that?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Is that okay with you, Scott?
Yep.
Okay. Then we've got through that. Road commissioner's position.
So just as a refresher, we are required by statute to appoint someone, one or two people, as road commissioner. But by statute, it's just an appointment. There are no specified duties. There's no authority to do anything by the appointment. So the only duties that the road commissioner would have are whatever the board decides. But what I had talked about last week is perhaps the simplest solution to this in fulfilling the statutory obligation is simply to appoint Jim as the road commissioner, since he's pretty much doing everything that is in the job description for the road commissioner anyway. We've already got Emily as the point of contact for VTrans. So I think between those two roles, that would cover all the bases. And Jim, you said you'd be open to talking about it seeing where that goes.
I did say I would be open on talking about it, but I'm not one of these guys that likes to talk that kind of stuff over the internet or phone or anything like that. And I would be more than glad to sit down with the whole board when this COVID-19 comes and goes and discuss a bit more of the particulars on it and moving forward from there. But as it stands right now, I'd rather limit my conversation about any of it until we can all be in the same room sitting down and talking about it.
Okay. So, sounds like we'll just put this off until whenever that time comes.
Well, I think we've been without one for almost a year now. I don't imagine it's going to make any difference in another few weeks. So that's fine with me. Anyone else have anything to put, any input in that one?
Nope.
John?
No.
Steve?
No, I think that's reasonable, and that will allow us to maybe even put together some sort of a job description for, say, as to what it's actually going to entail and get our ducks lined up.
Sounds good. Okay, we now have got Howe Hill delay of project, and as I spoke earlier, we are going to have to delay Howe Hill at least until the 15th of May. And Jimmy was in contact with Caleb from Pike a couple of weeks ago, and I suggested that maybe Jimmy wanted to, when we got this definitive answer from Chris Bump today, that maybe Jim would like to talk to Caleb and explain that he cannot start the project until the 15th, until the stay home, stay safe order is lifted. And I would so move that Jimmy be allowed to do that. I think it's only fair that if Pike can't start until the 15th, that they know that now, because the culverts, they were going to start on the 1st of May. Does anybody want to second that motion?
So just to be clear what the motion is, we're moving to delay the project to at least May 15th or to May 15th?
No, we have to delay. There's no choice. Okay. Or we'll lose $175,000. I move that Jimmy be delegated to talk with Caleb of Pike Industries to explain the situation to him and let him know that, because he talked to Caleb a couple weeks ago about the project, that we will lose $175,000 in grant money if we do not wait until this stay home, stay safe order is lifted from Governor Scott, and delegate that to Jim so that he has the authority to take that under his wing and touch base with him, because he's going to be probably the wingman to coordinate these guys coming in and just what they're doing and what's going on anyway. So it would be good if we delegated this conversation to him as well.
Okay, so he's just basically alerting Pike that we're delayed.
I feel we just have to do that because they were planning to come in soon after the 1st of May. They need to know that for their schedule.
Yeah, understood. So I guess another question, or maybe it's not even relevant, is there any impact on our side of the project in whatever decisions Sharon is making right now? Like, are there obviously...
Sharon is in the same boat. I spoke with them yesterday on a conference call because they asked me to call them in, and I did. And they also are going to, even though they don't have grant money on the table, they are going to honor Governor Scott's stay home, stay safe order. And they have talked to the subcontractor that was going to help them with the culverts on River Road, and saying that just as soon as the order is lifted, they expect him to be in there the next day. And so they also are going to, they're gung-ho to get the job done. We're going to continue on with the job. And I was quite sure that, although I said we hadn't had a board meeting, I was quite sure that you all were on board to get the job done. We had everything in place, but that we will have to delay it until the 15th. And so they're on board with the same situation.
Okay, so the message that we're delivering to Pike is we have to delay to May 15th, but we're, in your words, gung-ho to get going as soon as the stay-at-home order is lifted.
Absolutely.
Okay, sounds good.
I need a second for that motion.
I'll second that.
All those in favor? Chuck?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Okay, we got through that. Okay, tree cutting on South Pomfret. The reason that is there at the last meeting, we asked Cy to see what timber tenders thought they could do for us from the South Pomfret town line heading up toward Bartlett Brook Road and right up through to Howe Hill intersection. And Cy got back to me at the end of last week, and they will do that for the $1,800 a day price, and they thought it would take 2 days. And although we cannot work, and our road crew cannot work, this tree cutting can happen. That's this has nothing to do with the grant. They can't do anything on Howe Hill, but they could spend 2 days coming up through, and especially getting rid of all those dead elm trees that are from the Tego store down to the South Pomfret town line, which are really hazardous, I feel. One of them falls into the road most every time the wind blows. And so I would need a motion to allow them to do that, or contract with them to do that. And I told Cy that I could not give him the okay to have them do that until the meeting tonight. He isn't here tonight, is he, John? Anybody? Scott?
I don't know. He's not on the list now.
So I need some input or a motion to either have him do that or not.
So move so that we can discuss it.
Second? Anyone?
I'll second it.
Okay, any discussion?
I'm fine with it getting done. I mean, you could say that it's an emergency because, they could come down at any point and potentially cause a bad accident. So if you look at it from that would fall under allowed work during the stay-at-home order. However, we just need to be cognizant that order applies to everybody in the state, not just our road crew. So we just need to make sure we're not hiring people to come in and do things that we wouldn't be willing to go out and do ourselves because of the order. If we're hiring somebody to come and cut a tree that we've determined we're not, because not because it's unsafe for us, just because we're not working, then we shouldn't be hiring somebody else to do that same work.
Well, do we want to have them come in after the 15th of May? If they would be agreeable to do that at the price that they discussed?
I think I hear John saying something a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of saying two things at the same time here. I think you could make the case for doing it now and it being, quote-unquote, an emergency, because they are falling down, and we are talking about dead trees, and they could come down at any point. But then on the other hand, the state isn't doing any work unless something actually has failed. So I think it's certainly gray area at best, probably.
Right.
Would they still be willing to do it? Wouldn't they tell us, probably, we're sorry, but we can't do it at this point?
Well, they certainly could. I can email Cy back and say we're under this stay home, stay safe order, and we feel that we've been told that we can't work, and so we're in a gray area. Would they be willing to do it at the same price after the 15th of May? And if they're not, then we can just put it off till next winter. Some of the trees are going to come down anyway. It's just that they're kind of large, and if they land on a car, and we know they should have come down, there's a liability issue there, I suppose. And the ones that come to mind, the worst ones that come to mind, are the ones that you, just as you drive out of South Pomfret, opposite what used to be the organic farm, that are on that steep bank and on the other side. They're quite large, they're quite dead, and limbs come off fairly regularly. And I think that collection of them is the worst of the bunch. But other people may see different things. Okay. And I agree with John, we're in a gray area.
Yeah, I think John said that well. But the other question I have, just for sake of clarity, are these trees that our road crew can't handle regardless of when it's done? Or are we possibly contracting with timber tenders on this as sort of a supplement to our own road crew. I'm just curious if once our guys are back to work again, is this something they can handle, or is this, are these too big for our own crew to handle?
I don't think they're too big, but there's a, and John, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You run a lot, you cut a lot of trees. When you start cutting dead trees, it's quite risky because they don't hold together. There's large clumps of them there. And if you take somebody like timber tenders with a truck, he can cut off the top third and it'll fall down, and then the middle third and the bottom third. When you're dealing a live tree, you can kind of tell it where to go, and it doesn't all break up, and you don't get hit on the head with a limb that comes down. And so I think Jim thought that these were risky, too risky for him to cut. And if you'd seen what, if you, and I'm sure you have seen what he's cut up on Howe Hill, he's certainly willing to cut trees. But dead trees are quite risky in relation to live trees. Am I right, John?
Yeah, given what they are, I would certainly be more comfortable having a tree company do it than the road crew. So.
Okay. Yeah, that was my question. Is it somebody else needs to do it regardless?
Yes.
We're just talking timing.
That's correct. Bob Crean, you had a question. Don't forget to unmute yourself. You got to unmute yourself, Bob. Can you unmute him, Scott?
I'm trying.
Had that. Sorry.
Start
about
over
that.
Again, Bob.
Go ahead, Bob.
You might want to check with the state of Vermont's list of essential industries that they published, I think it was on March 25th. If I'm not mistaken, forestry industries, forestry products, and work, such as what Chippers does, is an essential industry.
This is not
timber tenders may be fully...
This is not forestry, and right now
timbers.
I work for Chippers, and we are down to a skeleton crew in Woodstock doing what are essential services. And this, if I were speaking from Chippers' perspective, we would probably come and do this work because we would, as a company, probably decide that it is essential given the fact that it could come down and cause damage. So I don't think that as a company you're going to have a problem with having somebody do it. It's still gray area, however.
Okay.
Yeah, what they're talking about in forestry is actual forestry logging. That's they're turning what they're taking out of the woods into a product, and that's what they're considering an essential service. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look.
Okay. So, do we want to? Maybe we want to talk to Cy and Timber Tender and say, has the state considered you an essential service? So that we can get out of this gray area situation?
That's not going to get us out of it.
It doesn't sound like the company. Yeah, it sounds like more the job is in question, whether it's essential than whether the business is an essential service. So,
but they certainly offered some essential services. I mean, you know, you have a tree that comes down in a windstorm and falls on your house. That would be considered an essential service, and you know, any tree company would be allowed to go out and remove that. Or the tree that, you know, you say is about to fall on the house, so you could use that analogy for the trees that are about to fall on the cars going down the road. I mean, I don't know if we're going to have an issue if we have them do it, but it's just something to be aware of, is all.
Would we have an issue if we asked them to do it?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that with this directive that I sent you today, it seemed abundantly clear to me that we were taking a risk if we had our road crew continue to work. That I thought that I personally thought that we could definitely say, Jimmy, you've got to. He said he needed one more day to get the roads so they wouldn't fall apart if we got a heavy rain and that kind of thing. So I figured we could, and potholes were part of the deal, and we could get away with that. And after that, I thought that we could not, or I felt that we were taking a risk that we could not. These trees have the likelihood, and why they haven't hit a car before, I don't know, but they have the likelihood in a windstorm to hit a car if it's going down the road when they topple over. That being said, with the Stay Home, Stay Safe order, there are a lot of less trees. The other thing is that we have to consider, and I understand the gray area and everything else, is that timber tender might do them now, but they might not be available to do them a month from now when the Stay Home, Stay Safe order is lifted, and then we might not be able to get them in here till next winter. And so if that's the case, are we comfortable leaving those trees there for a whole other three quarters of a year to take the risk of them falling on a car?
Maybe the best way to approach it, Emily, is to have Cy contact them and make sure that they feel confident that they can do this and nobody's going to get in trouble for it. And if they feel that they can and be within the guidelines, I mean, we've only got a couple of days that we're talking about, so it's not like they're going to be out for weeks. But if they feel that they can fall under these guidelines, then that the state's set out, then let them do it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Well, it sounds like, you know, the question is, do we ask them, we're willing to offer you, to pay you to do it, if you feel that it's okay for you to do it, and have Cy check with them.
Whatever.
I know some of these companies have actually contacted the state already, and they've received letters that they are deemed essential businesses and can be doing work. So I've seen other tree companies in town the last couple of days working. So
I think the and we've done it for some of our approved essential services at work. We have a letter written up that says that we did get approval from the state, and that way if anybody gets stopped, what I think we should do is, I mean, it's 2 days. I think they need to come down before they hit somebody. Yeah, it's in the gray area, but I'm okay with that for this. But just somebody on the board should, you know, write something up based on our decision saying that we consider this a, you know, an essential emergency work before it comes down and causes damage to somebody, and just make sure that they have a copy of that with them if something happens, that we've attempted to cover our backsides.
I can write a letter.
Would it be better for us to ask them to determine whether or not they thought that was essential, whether they thought it was truly a hazardous situation, rather than our trying to make that decision?
Why don't we leave it this way? I will contact Cy tomorrow, and he can have a conversation with them whether or not they are deemed an essential service. And if indeed they are, and we feel getting those trees that are going to fall on someone's car is an emergency situation or nearly so, then if indeed those two things are in a positive vein, then do we want them to do the 2 days worth of work? That's the question before us. In other words, I don't want to have to tell Cy, have Cy go through this and then say, well, no, we're not going to have you do the work anyway. We want them, are we all in agreement? We want the work done at some point.
I mean, I think it,
yeah.
I would,
yes.
As much as it is in the gray area, I think it's essential enough that I can be confident enough to not be too worried about it and just have them do it at this point, really.
Okay, so can you make a motion to that effect? And I will have this conversation with Cy regarding being within the guidelines. And I will write a letter saying that we feel this is emergency work so that cars, pedestrians won't get hit with flying debris from dead trees. Yeah. And that's all we're having him cut is dead trees.
I make a motion that we hire timber tenders for the 2 days as outlined in their proposal for the $1,800 a day to take care of some emergency tree work on Pomfret Road to prevent dead trees from continuing to fall on the road.
Second that.
Just a, I think it's a good motion. Just a quick question though is this section of Pomfret Road? We got a lot of dead trees because I can think of lots of places where I drive around town, and there are dead trees that are pretty close to coming down. So this is a section that's even worse off than some of the other places we've got in town.
Certainly,
is that
area?
I'm not as familiar with.
Of south of Tego there, the Catnip Hill, or across from where the old organic farm was. Is, of course, I drive that portion of road more than I do the north section, so I see it more, but I would say that that's the worst part of town. You know, so.
Yeah. I just think of that gap going down to West Hartford, and there's a lot of stuff.
Jimmy has cut quite a few of those, I thought he said.
There's still
a lot down there 3 or 4 weeks ago, but I haven't been down through there, so I don't know. The point is, especially down in South Pomfret, you get an awful lot of traffic. That being said, you get an awful lot of traffic down through the Gulf as well.
Exactly.
So maybe what we should do then is we should contact them, have them start with the 2 days, and in the meantime, we might be able to do it an extra day or two.
10 a.m. until 10 p.m. last night. I didn't think the 6-meter van was going to close. It was very unusual.
Well, that would be fine. But so John made the motion, as I recall, to have them do the work, 2 days of work at $1,800 a day, and start at the Pomfret Town Line, Woodstock Town Line, and head north on Pomfret Road and get as far as they can get with 2 days worth of work. I will second that motion. Is there any more discussion? That was your motion, was it not, John?
Yes.
John?
Emily?
Yes, Betsy.
I just can't imagine.
I can't hear you.
The state is... Oh, sorry. Is this better?
Yep.
Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I can't imagine that if the state considers potholes emergency, that they wouldn't consider dangerous tree situations an emergency. I don't think you'll have any trouble at all. And of course, I don't know, but that's what it seems like to me.
Well, we're going to go on that assumption, I think.
I think the worst that's going to happen if somebody does say something and it's deemed by somebody that it's not essential, the worst that's going to happen the first time around is they're just going to tell them that they can't continue. They're not going to start handing out fines from the get-go. I think it's going to be, you know, a civil conversation like, you know, you really shouldn't be out here doing this. Please go home is what it's going to start out as. So, you know, I don't have an issue.
Okay, so are we ready to vote on that motion?
Yes.
All those in favor, Scott? John?
Aye.
Scott, did you see yes? Chuck? Steve?
Aye.
That was you, wasn't it?
Aye.
Chuck, did you say yes?
I did.
I think we're all in agreement. We're a little delayed here. Anyway, I think the motion passed unanimously. Next on the list, disposition of pending personnel reviews and quarterly meetings with employees.
Sorry, I'm supposed to be on the agenda, I guess. Yep, I asked for this to be on the agenda because we're overdue on a number of personnel items, and so I guess the question is, are we effectively suspending our personnel management activities until we're out of this COVID-19? We haven't voted on it.
I would think that we should, unless there's something, you know, a major issue that comes up. Trying to do a review over Zoom is just not going to work out very well, so... Unless okay. anybody else has other feelings, that's what I would think we would do.
All right. I would, let's make it official then. So I'll put a motion on the table that we suspend all personnel management activities, including personnel reviews and quarterly meetings, until we are out from under the COVID-19 quarantine orders.
Second.
All those, any discussion? All those in favor, Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve? Are you there, Steve? Have we lost Steve?
He's here.
Steve?
He's muted.
I'll say aye. Hey, that'll make 4 out of 5.
I'm here. Yes.
Steve. Thank you, Steve. Unanimous. Sewer issues, town office, briefly. Hopefully we're going to take care of that. A plumber came in. There was a distinct sewer odor on Thursday and Friday. It was gone on Monday. And it's going to cost about $800 to get both tanks pumped. From talking to various former select board members, I don't think they've ever been pumped. If there's something more wrong with the system, no one will work on it till the tanks are pumped anyway. So I gave Ellen authority to get the tanks pumped. One concern wanted $2,800, but they were going to do some extra work on the ends of the pipes. And Herons, I think it is going to do it for about $800. There's two 1,000-gallon tanks. And that was under the $1,000 thing, and she did get two quotes. And so I told her to get it done, and hopefully the smell will go away, and we won't have to do anything more. So, now, any questions on that?
We should vote to approve that expenditure, just so we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
I move that we pay Heron's septic cleaning service to pump the two 1,000-gallon tanks at the town offices complex. I need second. A second. All second. Those in favor? Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
I am an aye as well. Thank you. Consideration of postponement of zoning hearing in light of COVID-19 and the passage of Act 92, formerly H-681. I need a motion on this, and then we'll discuss it.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, discussion. Nobody wants to say anything?
What are the, I know you've looked into it, Emily, what are the issues for and against one way or the other, I guess, legally?
Well, we will get, what is it, 60 days or 90 days extension after the COVID-19 stay home, stay safe order is lifted. Ben is here somewhere, too. I believe it's 90 days, is it not, Scott?
I'd have to go back and look at the statute, but that sounds right.
And so if the order is lifted till the 15th of May, That would be the 15th of June, 15th of July, 15th of August. We would have to adopt the zoning regulation, whereas right now I believe it is July 23rd. My only thought for having the hearing is, first, we've already warned it, but that's a minor matter, is that even if we are out from under the stay home, stay safe order, people are not going to want to go out and do things. They're not. And I personally would just like to see, if we don't get a well-attended hearing at all, if it doesn't work well, then we can always have another hearing. But we've already warned it, and all we've got to do is set up a meeting for it, and we could see how it came along. There are elderly people that might be happier to do it. And that's my thinking. And personally, I don't really care one way or the other.
I personally
have, but we've already warned.
Have no problem moving forward. I mean, yeah, Zoom isn't perfect, but, you know, in all reality, it provides the potential for more people to be involved, including those that would never come to a meeting, even if they wanted to, because it does. You can use your telephone and call in, or you can do it on your computer. You know, it's not like we had 50 people at the last hearing, so obviously it's the whole town doesn't actually want to be there. So I don't have a problem moving forward, but I'm open to either way, I guess, at this point.
Anybody else? Betsy? Betsy?
Yeah. What would you consider well attended?
Go ahead, Betsy.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
What yes. would you consider well attended? You know, for an online meeting. And while I think John's right, and there would be people who would come to an online meeting, I think there would also be people who wouldn't come for various reasons. I mean, I just got a notice on my computer that my connection's unstable, so, you know, whatever that means. I also think a hearing is slightly different from a meeting like this meeting, because you have five people who are mostly doing the talking. In a hearing, you're hoping that's not the case, that they're going to be, you know, the public would be the main floor. The other thing is, yeah, the January meeting was terribly attended, but part of that is because people didn't know really that there were changes made to the document that they had spoken to in July, and I think that's a really important thing. I can remember hearings, zoning hearings in the town hall years and years ago, of course, but still, where the town hall was pretty packed, and I think that should be a goal. And to that end, if you decide to do it now, which is certainly, you know, viable, but if you decide to do it now, I would hope that there'd be some advertising beyond the Vermont Standard, which is really not widely available right now. So it means that people really aren't going to get the word unless you make an extra effort to give them the word, and I think that's worth doing. And then my first question was, what would you consider well attended so that you would maybe go on and do an in-person meeting later on? So
I don't know. It's anybody's guess what well-attended is.
You could make a case for having an in-person one and going, well, it wasn't well-attended. Let's keep having them until we determine there's 50 people that show up. I mean, you kind of just have to make your best effort of advertising it so people can be there. And if they're not there, they're not there. It's just the way it is.
True, but I think that this is a major hearing for the town, and I think people need to know, number one, that there are changes made, and number two, you know, that there's a certain level of importance to this. I don't know what the difference is now and 20 years ago when people would just pack the town hall. I mean, Emily, you must remember that, that there were just so many people at hearings in the town hall. And I can't begin to see that might change, if it has changed. So...
Well, I think part of what you're seeing is the demographics of the town have changed. And when they passed the original zoning ordinance in 72 or 73, there were a lot more local people that were year-round residents. And you know, this is 50 years later, and I wouldn't venture a guess, but I'm guessing more than half of the homes in Pomfret are second homes. And those people, one, don't vote here, two, don't participate, and three, some of them don't even come up but 1 week a year, and they don't care. And so the demographics, because the demographics of the town have changed, the participation level in various things, and you've seen it in the town meetings, they aren't well attended like they were even 6 years ago. And so the whole demographic has changed. Quite frankly, I don't have any skin in the game. We've noticed it. I'm willing to give it a try and see what happens. It's not costing us anything at this point. And because the deadline will only shift a few days, we're not gaining much. I'm willing to go with whatever the board says. As I said in the email, it's a board decision. I don't have any skin in the game either way. I just would like to give it a try. I don't think people, especially people that are at risk, and a lot of people in Pomfret are elderly or they have immune deficiency issues, that they just are not going to come out in public for a good long while. And I could be wrong, but...
No, I think that's a fair enough point. I do. But I think it's going to be a trade-off either way. There are people who won't... buy into this format because they're not comfortable with it, whether it's a phone call or anything. There's just, you know, but I it's impossible to have that discussion because who knows?
Well, that's just it. Do you have any thoughts, Chuck?
I think that this is an awkward and uncomfortable way to do business, and that, for instance, Jim Potter's not wanting to discuss his taking the road commissioner's position until he can meet with the board face-to-face is an example of how people feel about that kind of thing. So there's an opinion.
Steve, what do you think?
I have mixed feelings. I mean, I see the benefits to staying on course and seeing how it turns out, and then I can see the other side as well as to the waiting. But maybe the best approach is just to stay on course, see what we get for a turnout, and if we have to do more, do more.
Scott?
Yeah, I think it's lousy timing for a hearing right now, and I think it's kind of a mixed bag on this technology. You know, I'm a proponent of it, but at the same time, I mean, I'm on now with what's going on with COVID-19. I'm literally, no kidding, on video meetings all day, every day in my day job. And the success of it is, sometimes really good and sometimes not so good. So, for example, I was on meetings today, both in the morning and the afternoon, with probably over 20 people. And it was a little chaotic and tough to manage and tough to hear. So I think this forum that we're in right now is the select board works pretty well. And kind of to the point of I think we should be trying to get as much public participation as possible. I think there are a lot of reasons why people might not participate. Some of the reasons that Emily highlighted on demographics. But I think also we're not really publicizing it either. And I don't think folks really grasp the fact that this is the most significant change in land use regulation in Palm Prince history in many, many years. This is a big, big change. And maybe some people don't care, but maybe they don't care because they don't know the import of it. And there are some things that are worth knowing and promoting about the zoning regs. So I guess at the end, I would be in favor, if we're going to go forward with the hearing that's already warned, I would be in favor of committing to doing a second hearing closer to the actual adoption date, since we don't have to adopt until July 23rd. So I think that we should plan on doing a second hearing if this first one doesn't, even if it goes okay. I think it would still be wise to do another one, just given the circumstances we're in, and delay any vote on adopting the zoning regulations until closer to the July 23rd date. And just as a legal reference, Ben mentioned last week that we have a deadline coming up where if we don't adopt the zoning regs by May 9th, that the we will no longer be able to review new applications under the new zoning regulations. We have, aside from this discussion we're having about the hearing right now, we have the statutory ability to extend that May 9th deadline. So what I would suggest we do is three things. We commit to doing a second hearing closer to July 23rd, that we hold off on adopting the zoning regulations until July 23rd, and that we extend the deadline for reviewing new applications under the new zoning regulations to coincide with July 23rd. And to me, those would be the most productive steps forward.
Looking at the calendar, I would hope that you would say that you would adopt on July 15th, because if you say you're going to adopt not before July 23rd,
I just say closer to, I didn't say on.
So that, in other words, a regular select board meeting would be July 1st and then July 15th. And so it would seem to me that it would be logical to schedule a second hearing, if you were going to have one, so that you could then adopt, if you felt comfortable with the participation and the comments, you could adopt on or before that July 15 meeting.
Well, or we hold a special meeting for the hearing and do it all in one shot rather than doing it at a regular meeting.
Well, yeah, but the reason you have a hearing is to take into consideration comments. If you're going to adopt the same day as the hearing, that means I'm really not interested in anybody's comments. And then that makes the hearing kind of a moot point. If you're going to have a hearing, we should have it soon enough so that we can still adopt before that 23rd deadline. And actually want to hear what people have to say. And I realize that legally we can do that, but I don't. If you're going to have a hearing, the idea is to listen to what people have to say, and that's not what you're doing if you do that. You know what I mean?
Emily, I so completely agree with you. I think that's that's a good point. Thank you.
Well, I mean, isn't that why we're having the hearing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's take
this in two steps. first of all, do we want to have the hearing that we have already scheduled and warned? Do we want to have that hearing and see how it goes?
I guess
that's the first step.
As long as we have the ability to have a second one, then what's it hurt to have it? I mean, we've already spent the money to warn it, so.
And so then the second question is, do we want to have or to commit to a second hearing at a date not certain at this particular time, depending on, or do we want to say we will consider committing to a second hearing?
I would wait
at a particular time.
I would just wait and see how it goes, and, you know, I'm fine with having.
Well, if we don't get any participation or it doesn't work, I would think it would be logical to have a second hearing anyway.
Yes.
And maybe by then we will know more as to whether Governor Scott is going to rescind that order on the 15th of May or not. We'll know more in another 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean, we may end up with no choice, I suppose. It could continue to get extended.
Yeah. Oh, well, in which case you wouldn't be able to do it. But I think in fairness to the people in the town, to have both methods is the right thing to do. And I would also encourage you to somebody, I mean, Scott, you seem to have a good handle on this. Not that nobody else does, but to advertise to the town what's at stake here, what it means, what kinds of things people can speak to. I don't know.
Well, that notice indicated a good portion of what was in it and what it was all about.
But what it didn't say, Emily, was that there had been a major change since the July hearing, and that's the one that people went to and would never have really understood before the January hearing that there was a change. It would be, as I said, a reasonable person would think that what they heard and questioned in July was what was going to be voted on, because there was no indication anywhere to anybody that a change had been made. An important one, actually. So
we've got to make a decision here. And so
I think with everything going on, I think, yes, having a second one's probably a good idea, although I don't think we should
schedule it yet.
I don't think we should restrict ourselves to having to have it at this point, just given the unknowns of everything going on. I think we should make that decision after, but that's my opinion.
So you made a motion originally, John, to consider the postponement of the zoning hearing, and someone seconded that.
Yep.
Okay, so we are now, we've considered that, and so I'm unclear as to how we should proceed here. I guess we need we considered that, and because you need to reword a motion so that we've considered it, we've discussed it, we need to now have a motion to either postpone the hearing or not. You follow what I'm saying? Consideration of it doesn't give us an answer for what we're searching for.
Sure.
So we've got to decide whether we need a motion to say either we will postpone the hearing or we will have the hearing as scheduled.
I make a motion that we have the hearing via Zoom as scheduled. And we'll make a determination as to whether we have a second, hopefully, if it is, we do have a second, that it can be an in-person meeting, but that decision would be based on turnout and sentiment that comes out of the Zoom meeting.
Do we have a second for that?
Second.
Was that you, Chuck?
Nope.
It was me, Steve.
Yeah.
So you seconded it?
Yes.
Does there need to be any more discussion? So all those in favor of having the first hearing and making a decision on a second hearing after the participation is known of the first hearing, and we'll know.
We can, I guess I would amend that slightly to that we would make a determination at the conclusion of, maybe that's too soon, I don't know if we should make the determination at the conclusion of that hearing or not, but
the piece that's missing for me, I want to vote for this, but the piece that's missing is I know there's a hesitancy to commit to holding a second hearing, and I get that to an extent, but I guess what I'd like to see is, given the circumstances we're in all around, is that we will at least commit to holding off on adopting the zoning regulations until we've really had an opportunity to assess whether we can hold a hearing in person. Because I think what I'm hearing is that we would prefer to do the hearing in person if we could. And if I'm correct in that, and that's what I'm hearing, I would like to see us commit to not adopting the zoning regulations until we're until we can figure out how to have an in-person hearing, and if that's even necessary. But just creating that space to do that. And on the one hand, I get folks don't want to commit to a second hearing, but I think we should at least commit to creating that space. Do you know what I mean?
Can we do it on a sunny day out in the field with speakers 10 feet apart on a Saturday afternoon? You know, Vermont style?
I've heard two different conflicting things, that you're not sure about the second meeting because you're not sure you can hold it, and then the other thing is that depending on how many people, you know, what the attendance of the Zoom meeting is, you'll make that decision. So I'm not sure which one is...
I guess I'm happy to have a second meeting. I just don't want to... We just shouldn't word it so that the second meeting will be an in-person meeting, because if that becomes impossible to do with everything, I just don't want to limit ourselves to that, given what could continue, that's all.
Can I make a couple of comments if I'm on?
Sure.
Okay. One comment is that this meeting that we're having today, the clarity is unbelievably good. I've been able to hear everybody, and I'm sure that you're able to hear me as well, I would think.
Yes.
If you have a meeting in person, with social distancing still in effect, for especially people over 60, you're going to have a speakerphone. And I'm very familiar with the speakerphone and how it is really difficult to hear anything that goes on in the meeting on a speakerphone. So the fact that I think you're naive if you think you're going to have a meeting, an in-person meeting with social distancing that people are going to want to do, irrespective of what the governor says, for some foreseeable future, and you're going to have some that are going to want to be on a speakerphone. That is not necessarily a good situation for those people at home. The third comment is, you may decide after this first hearing that you want to throw the thing back to the Planning Commission and not go forward with it. So it would seem to me, and I agree with Betsy and Emily on the advertise it a little bit on listserv and get some people to show up. But it would seem to me that you would wait till after the first one to decide what you do after that. Why would you decide that now?
That's kind of, you know, have the meeting and we'll make it, a determination after that. And hopefully people trust us to make that determination. I mean, that's really where I'm at.
John, what do you mean by speakerphone for an in-person meeting?
Typically at the town offices, for those people that don't attend, Emily's been on one, Billy Emmons has been one, I've been on a lot of them. There's a speakerphone on the table with the select board. Anybody can call in the 800 number to be on that speakerphone.
Okay, I get it. But may I suggest that, especially if we're still social distancing, which is a distinct possibility, that it not be held in the town offices, but in the town hall, and maybe even have something like we have a town meeting with a microphone system or... No, we don't want people talking into the same microphone. But I think the town offices is not the best venue.
How do you get 50 people in the town hall with social distancing? You're talking more like 12 people.
Well, how do you get them in the town offices?
But this is the point. The point that John is trying to make is you're wanting us to schedule a second hearing that is an open public meeting like what we normally would have, which we all would prefer, when we have no idea what is going to happen after the 15th of May.
Correct. So if you can't do it in July or June or whenever you're going to do it.
So what I don't want to see happen is, I'm game to have a second hearing if we can have a public hearing. That's fine. But I don't want to, by this motion, pigeonhole us into having a second meeting that is going to be no better than the first, because it will be a virtual meeting just as we're having now. And also, we don't know what kind of participation we'll get. I'm not a problem with a second meeting, but don't pigeonhole us in to a second meeting when we have no idea what's going to happen with COVID-19, whether we all are even going to be in business or be healthy.
Okay, but I don't think that's an issue, because you can always change because of the circumstances. I think if you, and I'm not trying to pigeonhole anybody into anything. I think a speakerphone meeting is probably worse than Zoom. But, and I go to a lot of Zoom meetings every week, and in certain instances, John, for example, you say this one is wonderful, and it is, but there have been about six people speaking, and that's a whole other thing. That's a meeting, not a hearing. And I think that if you plan for it and it can't happen, then it doesn't happen. That's all.
Not to cut anybody off, but we're talking around in circles, so it's time to call the question and vote on the original motion that I made.
Would you please restate the motion so we know what we're voting on, John?
The motion was that we would hold, as planned, a virtual meeting in Zoom on the original date, and we will make a determination if a second meeting is needed after that, in the hopes that it would be in person, but given what's going on, the reality knowing that it may not. But we would make the determination on the second meeting after we have the one that's scheduled.
I'll second that motion.
Didn't Steve already second it?
Yeah, I did.
Then we don't have to second it again. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor, Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. On to status of finance.
Before we move on.
Yes.
So we still have a critical thing, action item on the zoning regs. And with the review of the new application under the current and new zoning regs. So I would... I think we need to move that deadline, because we're going to hit it here soon.
Yes.
So we've got the we've got the authority right now to extend that deadline. And so what I would basically, let me make sure I do the math here.
Is this the deadline where the new one, the Zoning Board of Adjustment is right now, they are considering both the new and the old?
Right, so what I would move that the board do is that we extend the deadline of reviewing new applications against both the current and new zoning regulations and extend that deadline to July 23rd.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All those in favor? Chuck?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Excellent. Before the end of the meeting, we will have to determine how we're going to work this hearing, whether the town wants to buy a Zoom account for $14.95 a month or what. So let's not forget that under meeting wrap-up.
I'll just do it on mine, Emily. We'll just keep it.
Are you sure you want to keep doing that?
I don't mind. It doesn't cost me anything.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because I think the town can afford it. We shouldn't be freeloaders.
It's not like we're going to do this all the time. So it's,
well, let's hope not. That would be very gracious of you, Scott. Thank you. Status of Financial Management Committee's progress. Right now, we are not meeting. We do not want to try and start meeting over Zoom. I don't think Ellen is here tonight, and Nancy, I guess, isn't here either. But so we have suspended operations. We put that notice on the website, and we hope that when we can start meeting in person, we will be able to finish up. Nancy has been working on the documents, and we've been looking them over. But we feel that we just need to get together, and right now we just can't really do that. So that's where that is.
So it sounds like there are some draft documents out there.
Nancy has those, but she's uncomfortable until we get agreement as to the drafts, to sharing those with the general public. But you can ask her about that. She may be willing to share them.
Anybody can ask for them. So,
Well, you're more than welcome to ask them. Ask her for them. She's been working on them. I do not have them in my possession. The most recent ones that she has been working on. So you're welcome to ask her.
Okay, yeah. But they're not confidential, so they need to
be. That is right. They are not. Roles and responsibilities in town government.
Yeah, this is a subject that I've asked to be on the agenda several times over the past couple of years. And it's one that keeps coming up in a number of different avenues. But I'll just, say what I've said before in the past. We would do ourselves in town government a big favor and avoid both group and individual conflict if we would sit down and get an understanding of what the roles and responsibilities are. I don't want to belabor it tonight because this is a tough subject to tackle over a Zoom meeting, and it probably is something that might be better to tackle further on, but I think we need to keep it on our radar. And it is actually part of the Financial Management Committee's charge, is to, at least as it relates to financial management stuff, lay out roles and responsibilities. But, we run into misunderstandings or conflict because there's a lack, in my view, a lack of understanding of what the roles and responsibilities are. And I can cite a number of examples from past experiences, but the bottom line is that I think our town government would function a lot more smoothly if we would just sit down and lay it out and have some clarity around who's responsible for what. So I guess that's all I'll say for tonight, but I guess what I'd like to see is the board commit to, you know, not in a motion tonight, but keep this as an agenda item. You know, it's going to take time, but keep it as an agenda item for the foreseeable future and keep coming back to this.
Any other comments? I think we should do that. I'd like to be able to do that when we can all meet and discuss things in a more, in an easier way. This is great to have a meeting this way, but it certainly isn't ideal. It's better than no meeting at all, and we can get the business of the world done, but it isn't ideal. But anyway, I heard. I think we all did. Open questions in formulating a town compensation plan. That's John and Scott.
Yeah, so I'm going to share my screen again, just so you can see the open questions. So you should momentarily see, let me know, everybody should see basically the agenda packet for tonight. And I'm just going to scroll down here. So I think before we can get to putting meat on the bones of a compensation plan, there are some open questions I think we need to work through. One, and I'll just read off what everybody should be seeing. One is we've got a mishmash of stuff going on. We have some people who are paid on stipends, some people who are paid by the hour. And we don't really have, at least to my knowledge, a logical or framework or rationale for why we do that. John posited that maybe the explanation is that in some parts of town government, you might have a three-person body and one or two people do more work than the others, and it's not fair for everybody to get paid the same stipend, so therefore an hourly wage is the fairer approach. But otherwise, I'm not sure that we have a rational reason that some people are, why some people that are elected and appointed are paid an hourly wage versus a stipend. But we should tackle that, because why it's relevant for the compensation plan is we should be looking at not just people who are quote employees, but everybody else, and determine whether they're eligible for pay increases. And that speaks to the second bullet point. How would the compensation plan apply to those who may not be quote employees, but still receive an hourly wage or stipend? Are we going to have some structure in place that in some way increases those wages? And then in reference to our last meeting, we talked about having a simplified three, beginning level, mid-level, senior level for each job description. How do we determine the wage of those? So, for example, VLCT publishes the participation survey, and there are definitely some anomalies in the data, but would our approach be very simple to say, hey, we just take the low, median, and high for each position, and those are our three wages? Or do we consider other factors? Do we, does the size of the town matter? And actually, John made a good point that in smaller towns, at least highway crew, they actually need to be more versatile than in larger towns, because they need to know how to do more stuff. They need to know how to operate more equipment. But we do need to figure out whether we're going to take a simple, let's just do the low, median, high, or are we going to try and come up with some other way to determine what the level wages are for each position. So those are the questions I think we need to answer before we really put together a compensation plan.
One position, and can I move the rest of life?
Namaste. Somebody's got some background noise going on.
As far as the third point, the wage level, the BLC, I was speaking with Sharon, the select board assistant, and Deb Jones, the financial person there, and I asked them about wages, and just to get a feel, and this was some time ago, I asked them about wages and what kind of other compensation, fringe benefits they gave, just for personal reference. And one thing that they said to me was that not all towns participate in that VLCT survey.
Right.
So it may or may not necessarily be a true depiction of what the state is paying throughout the whole state. And the second thing is, too, is that different areas of the state have different wage levels, and you notice this when they were discussing in legislature the minimum wage discussion. What happens up in the Northeast Kingdom, and what happens down here or in Chittenden County next to and or in Burlington or in the Upper Valley is not indicative of how one gets paid throughout Vermont as a whole. And so I think that VLCT survey has some benefit. It doesn't necessarily give us, whether it's the average that you're going to filter out or whatever, it doesn't say what your competition pays that you're trying to get good people from to work for a town such as ours. And so the VLCT compensation survey just doesn't really take the competitive nature of the position and what it takes to fill that position with good people into consideration.
I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you saying we shouldn't be looking at that data at all, or?
No, I'm just saying that is not the be-all and the end-all, because as you well know, the Upper Valley did have, and doesn't right now, but hopefully we'll get back there, to where it has an unemployment rate of something like 1%. And up in the Northeast Kingdom, that definitely is not the case. And so if you want to get good people to work for you, you may have to pay more down here to get a good person than you will in the Northeast Kingdom. And all of those numbers go into that survey if they all participate. And so when you average a high and a low and get to a median income, it may be askew because of the competition factor. In other words, you can take a VLCT survey and say you're going to pay $18 an hour for an entry level person, but you may not get a single person to apply for that job at that low wage in the Upper Valley. That's all I'm saying. So one has to consideration the area in which you live when you decide what wage amounts you're going to put in for each level.
So that's the reason why I posed the question, is that what are the factors we want to look at? What are the filters we want to apply? And I think what I hear you saying, Emily, is that your viewpoint is we should only be looking at wages for the Upper Valley. Is that what I'm hearing? If we're going to whatever extent we're going to use the data in VLCT survey, because it's the only data we have, unless we want to conduct our own survey,
do we only want to look at Upper Valley towns to figure out what our barometers are?
I'm not suggesting that that is exactly what you want to do. I'm just saying that you have to consider what your competition for the same kind of individual pays in the area in which you live, because it doesn't matter what they pay in the Northeast Kingdom if here in the Upper Valley you can't pay, say you're going to pay that much and get a single person to apply. You're not going to fill your positions. You have to understand what your competition is in the area in which you live. Because in this particular instance, for instance, with a road crew person, you're going to ask him to leave within 20 minutes of his town, And so it means you're going to pull those individuals directly from the Upper Valley. So really, your competition in getting those people to work for you is basically 20 minutes away from Pomfret. And so maybe that's the only place that is really important to look at that data. That's just one. When I read these things, that was just one way that I looked at it. Is we have to compete within 20 minutes of our local area, and so it really doesn't matter what they pay in the Northeast Kingdom or Chittenden County. If we pay what people are paying for the same kind of employee right here in the Upper Valley. So maybe indeed that is correct.
So we can certainly cut the data that way. That's an easy thing to do, right? We can draw the line and draw a circumference around a 20-minute circumference around Pomfret. All the towns that fall within that circumference, well, that's what we'll pull into our analysis. That's easy to do. We need to have some logical way to come up with a number. And so you're offering one. I think we can do that.
Keep going.
No, you're making
you
me
have
mad.
To go.
I'm laughing.
Do A, B.
So, I mean, I'll take that as an action item. And we'll cut the data that way and see how it looks.
I'm just saying that if we're asking our people to come in from just that local area, that's where our competition is.
I want to see that.
And we ought to consider that.
Okay.
As far as the other two items, those are sticky issues, which I have thought about significantly and still haven't come up with an answer for. But there may not be any rationale, and maybe we want to reconsider how elected and or appointed officials are paid. I do think it's important. Personally, I think it would be important and helpful if there was some methodology so you could fit them into some kind of plan so that you would know, so that you could fit them into some kind of plan so that they would know right off exactly where they were going to fit, and we didn't have to jury rig things around to come up with some kind of plan for that.
Right. Agreed. That's exactly right. The other facet to this, which I mentioned last time, is that we also have to be very careful. As I mentioned at the last time we talked about this, is labor law doesn't give a crap whether somebody is elected, appointed, or hired, because there are certain factors that labor law looks at to determine whether somebody is, quote, an employee. And Jill Muir confirmed this last year when we talked about it, that just by virtue of paying somebody an hourly wage, that it is not in and of itself decisive. But if somebody were looking at somebody in Pomfret and trying to decide from a labor law perspective whether that person is an employee or not, the fact that they're paid an hourly wage would be taken into consideration. So all I'm saying is, aside from the fairness around pay and fitting someone into a compensation plan, we also need to be really mindful of folks that are getting paid an hourly wage. And then that also dovetails into some other statutory requirements around paid sick time and stuff like that. So we do need to look at this, I think, more carefully.
When it comes to the people that we're paying hourly, that and it's basically it's them getting too many hours, and now they're considered they're not a part-time employee anymore. They're potentially a full-time employee, which then would potentially make them eligible for, different benefits and other things. Is, within the description for that is you can limit the number of hours they can work in any given week, which would solve that problem potentially.
Those are all parameters that would have to be put in place, though, if somebody's in. Yep. They're not in place now, but no. That would be a personnel policy kind of issue. Yep. So, well, all right. So for tonight, I think we've got at least one action item, and that is to cut the VLCT data in the way that Emily is suggesting. And these other topics seem like they're bigger to tackle. So we'll have to keep coming back at it.
I can't recall. Does that VLTC data include benefits?
I don't recall.
Well, I don't recall either, but
I take that back. It does. There is a section on fringe benefits. But it's separate from the wages.
So in other words, one of the reasons that people take a job like what we have for the road crew is that they get benefits and they get retirement. Mm-hmm. And so when you're deciding a wage, as you've spoken many times about, it isn't just the dollar amount of the wage, it's the dollar amount of the wage plus the amount that all the fringe benefits are giving. So we might do better, rather than take the VLCT survey, we might just want to take that circle that you discussed, your 20-minute circle, and just pull the towns in that circle and say, what are you paying for an hourly wage on your low, medium, or high-level people, and what are you giving for benefits? And it might be easier to fathom out where we sit and how we should be sitting than to go with a VLCT survey.
Well,
I don't think very many towns are going to come into that 20-minute area.
I'm still kind of confused what you're saying. Are you saying we should not be looking at the VLCT data?
No, I don't have any problem looking with it, but the benefits and what actually they give for benefits, whether they contribute $20 a month to their health insurance or 10% or 25%, all of those things are kind of hard to fathom out with that VLCT survey. Maybe not. I can't remember. I haven't looked at it carefully in a while. But we might do better just to ask our neighboring towns where this 20-minute pool is going to come from and say, what do you give for an hourly wage to start? What are your benefits? Because you should be able to assume that they would offer the same benefits to all of their, quote, road employees or whatever other employees, and how their personnel policy works, whether indeed they're going to pay benefits on a half-time employee or a full-time employee or a 30-hour-a-week employee, and how all that is going. There are a lot more pieces to the puzzle than just an hourly wage. Do you follow what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be critical of the work you're doing. I'm just saying that
you're echoing what I've been trying to say for the past couple of years, is that we should be looking at the
because that's all part of the compensation. And especially when you consider, well, the good part of that compensation is tax-free. And so it makes it even more valuable.
It is definitely all part of it and definitely should be a factor in how much you pay somebody. But unlike when you pay somebody, say, $20 an hour is $20 an hour, but depending on who the person is and what their household income is and how many dependents they have and all of these things, you know, full health insurance can work out to being a ginormous benefit to somebody, or it could work out to being no benefit at all to another person. And so, you know, it's very hard to classify, you know, what that is worth, you know, to a prospective employee. Yes, it should definitely be part of the consideration, but it's very hard to make it, oh, well, we're spending, you know, $10,000 per employee, so, all right, you're making $20 an hour, so, you know, you're really making X per hour. You're not, and so it's much harder to classify that is my point.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, John. I mean, benefits mean different things to different people. So I think your point, Emily, that it needs to be part of the picture is spot on. We do need to – all we're talking about right now is piecing together the wage part. But looking at the total value of the compensation package is really important, because as what John is saying is – what we want to get to is what a lot of, and even the, you know, we don't have to be as formal about it as the state of Vermont, but, you know, when the state of Vermont hires somebody, you know, they put together and say, this is what your compensation package is worth. And as a lot of people know, state jobs really don't pay that well, but the benefits are great. And so, you know, in my experience being around Montpelier, by and large, people work for the state because the pay, the benefits are so great. And so that's why there are certain types of people that gravitate toward that kind of work, because they're looking for the benefits and not the pay. But if you go to a private sector situation, you might get a mixed bag of stuff where some people don't care at all about the benefits and are just interested in the wage. But others might see, you know, as John is saying, they might need the family health insurance, and that might be a big plus. So for our purposes, though, I think we do need to, when, you know, this is where the competition part comes into play. When we're trying to hire people, that should be part of our pitch, is to say, hey, this is our pay, but oh, by the way, our benefits are awesome, which is really not an untrue statement. Our last time we did the analysis, which was a couple of years ago, and I don't think things have changed, our benefits were better here in Pomfret than they were than a lot of towns in Vermont, not just surrounding, but we actually have pretty generous benefits for our employees. So that should be a selling point, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Right now, we're just kind of building this up piece by piece. And everything you saw laid out in those open questions are some of the initial pieces we need to build out. The wage is just one piece of it. But so I guess I want to go back to what you were saying, Emily, though, is I think just to summarize, I know the benefits data is in the VLCT survey, but I thought what I heard you say is, in addition to the VLCT survey data, we should be querying some of the surrounding towns.
Well, let's let's look at the data. I'll be honest, I haven't looked at that in a bit. And so if it's all there, we don't have to. But if there's no sense in reinventing the wheel. But if you take that, what we have said in the personnel policy or in the hiring policy, I can't remember where it was, that when we advertise for a person, we say they've got to live within 20 minutes of poverty. That's what we have said, so that they could get here in 20 minutes in the winter. That was part of our job description that we advertised. And so we should take the towns that are within that circle and use those as a guideline rather than going out 50 miles or 75 miles or 100 miles when indeed we are asking people that are that close or that are willing to move that close in order to work here. So that's where we need to compete. That's all I'm saying. And I think we can get there, whether we get it out of the compensation survey or what. But I think we're all in agreement that that's what we need to do.
I agree. I guess I just want to clarify one more thing is you're saying 20 minutes. 20 minutes is a little bit tough to measure. I think it might be better to say pick something like 20 miles, you know.
Well, that's fine, but I picked the 20 minutes because that's what we said in those advertisements when we were advertising for
work. Right, and that I understand, and that's a little bit different, but why don't we just, for sake of drawing 20 that.
20 miles is fine. It's close.
Okay. All right, cool. That's how we'll do it then. All right. Well, all right, so we got enough to take some next steps on this.
Okay, so next on the agenda is the TA-60. I had, because Neil Lamson was on the board and did these TA-60s for a number of years, I asked him to go through the town report and do a TA-60, and that is what was included in the agenda packet. And I would like, what he did was he used a percentage on winter versus summer maintenance. He said when Hazel was town clerk, he and she went through several years worth of data, and they came up with a percentage split on summer versus winter, and he's been using that right along, and that's what he did there. And he said you don't want to put in the cost of the purchases of the trucks because those are going to come out of the reserve funds, not your operating funds. And so this is the document. We were supposed to put that in 60 days from the day of the town, after town meeting. And so this document and the town report, and also I have a certificate of compliance, which also needs to go in, which just says that we abide by the town and road bridge standards. We've adopted those, and we have we exceed or meet the minimum requirements, and we do have an up-to-date highway network inventory, and we need to send that certificate of compliance in. And the reason I would like to get that done is that I don't want to give them any excuse to take away our $175,000. And so did you guys have any chance to look over those figures?
I did. I still have the same comments I had last time. I did the TA-60s for 3 years myself, so I'm pretty familiar with it. And I don't really understand the statement that we wouldn't put in the expenditure for the trucks because
it's coming out of reserves. It's not coming out of your operating budget.
So is the Howell Hill paving project is also coming out of reserves. So by that logic, we shouldn't be.
Well, yes, but that was listed as a special project.
That doesn't matter. So I know this for sure, having done this in the past. You just add another line and put the expenditure there. It doesn't have to be a quote project. It is just an expenditure.
So the truck expenditures really should be in there. And I do see that the 90,000 was added above, so that's good too.
Yeah.
But the truck expenditures really should be in there. I mean, they too are coming out of reserves, just like the Al Hill Road paving project.
Well, I kind of Neil did an awful lot of these. I kind of thought he knew what he was doing, and I still think he does. And I asked him specifically about that, and he said, "No, you don't put it in because it's coming out of reserves. It's not a special project. It's just part of the deal."
No, I respectfully disagree. And again, you know, I've done a number of these too. So, the bottom line is, it doesn't really matter if it's an expense. It's an expense. The fact that it's coming out of reserve is just, that's just.
I'm looking at one right now. It's from the town of Richmond, and they have theirs special funds, bonds, or earmarks, and theirs says use of highway reserve to buy a truck. And that has the amount that they took out of the reserve for that truck. That was the only one I could find online.
Well, I can get hold of Mike Blakesley before I send this in, and if he thinks the truck should be there, we'll put him in under expenses, and if not, we will leave them off. Would you be comfortable with that?
That's fine.
Yep.
Okay, so can you approve that with that change if need be, and I'll contact Mike Blakesley tomorrow so we can get this in in a timely fashion.
I'll move that we approve the TH-60 with confirmation, yay or nay, whether the expense for the trucks need to be included.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All those in favor? John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott? Emily, did I hit everybody?
Yep.
Excellent. I've got to get back to my agenda. Okay. And also, the certificate of compliance, can you offer? Technically, it can say newly authorized administrator. I'm not really that either. But because we can't all seem to get around to sign this thing, which we might normally do, I'm just going to sign it as chair of the board. Is that acceptable to the board?
That's fine. And Emily, do you have it in PDF format?
It is in PDF format. Actually, I think you got those letters. From Mike Blakesley.
Yeah.
I have not filled it out with Comfort Vermont. The town road and bridge standards were adopted on April 5, 2017, and we do exceed the minimum requirements, and we do have an up-to-date highway network inventory.
This is just a technical note, but I don't know if you were planning to literally print it off and sign it and scan it and send it, but you can, if you've got it in PDF already, you can just sign it on your computer, and if you need help, I can show you how to do that.
No, I can. Okay, so, but I just want to get them there. I'll have to talk to Blakesley tomorrow anyway. So, do I have approval to sign this for the board?
I move that we authorize Emily to sign the certificate of compliance.
Second.
All those in favor, Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Okay. I had a Frey Arneal come up to me at town meeting, and I kind of forgot about him. He would like to volunteer for the Energy Committee as an additional member. He's had quite a bit of, from what he said, quite a bit of experience in nuclear energy. Excuse me? Did somebody say something?
No, I think you just got a little digital blip there.
Nuclear energy and things, and he's quite interested. He's retired. He's been doing something with ski areas, but that job just ended. What do you feel about adding him to the Energy Committee?
He's a good man. Let's appoint him.
I need a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Okay. Did you get the email that I forwarded to you from Neil Lamson regarding the request to use the town hall parking lot twice a week when it gets to be farmers market season, because the Mount Tom Farmers Market appears to not be able to be open this year because of COVID-19?
This is going to be for pre-orders, and people are simply going to be picking stuff up, I'm assuming, correct?
Correct. He's not going to have a roadside stand, and he's going to, at the very most, he thought two people might be there at once. He will coordinate their pickup times, and he would use it twice a week, he said.
Understanding under the state's directives and stuff, that yes, they've deemed farmers markets non-essential, but they have said that CSAs are essential and that they can continue to operate and distribute their orders. So under that guidelines, I would be fine with him using it simply for people to stop in and pick up their orders.
Would you like to make that in a motion?
I make a motion that we allow Neil Lamson to use the parking lot twice a week for people to stop and pick up their orders from him and their farm.
Do we want to limit it just from a traffic control standpoint to the number of people at a time?
He said the most that he would have there would be two people at a time.
Yeah, okay. I suppose if he could try and, to the best of his abilities, have people have some kind of a time slot so there's not, 10 people in there at once, which would be beneficial for more than one reason, health as well as congestion.
Didn't he indicate that in the email that they were going to have specified times?
Okay, perfect.
Any other discussion?
Can we just restate that in the motion, though, that we're authorized for the specified times, just so we clear that up?
Okay. That would be fine.
And so just add to the motion that he have, to the best of his ability, specified times for his customers to stop and pick up their produce.
Did you get a second, John?
No, I don't think so.
I'll second that.
Just one more question. Is this authorization to use the town hall?
The parking lot.
The parking lot. But is this a... I'm just thinking now, is this a right-of-way thing, or is this a parking lot thing? Is it not... We're not talking about doing anything in the right-of-way, right?
No.
Okay.
The only other thing I would add is to request that he put up road cones during the time that he's going to be up there.
Yep. Yeah.
This would be a good idea. Which brings up the point, we never did get those road signs up there. But we can't do that without a traffic study and all of the things that we asked Two Rivers and V-Trans to coordinate down at the Tego store situation is put on hold because of COVID-19 as well. All those in favor of that motion, signify by aye. Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
I'm going to recuse myself because it's my father-in-law, so.
And myself, aye. That's all I have on the agenda. Is there anything that I've forgotten? I think I went down through them one by one. meeting wrap up?
Move that we adjourn.
I have not seen any select board correspondence because I haven't been in the town offices, but I will make a point of going up there, and if there's anything important, I will alert you to it. Becky has been opening my mail, so I assume there was nothing important. Review of assignments. I don't know what anybody else is going to do, but I'll talk to Mike Blakely about the truck purchases, and I will talk to Cy about timber tender, and I will call the furlough on VLTC. And Scott, would you, as soon as you can, work up, it appears as though the next two select board meetings will have to be via Zoom, and that hearing will have to be via Zoom, and we should get especially the hearing particulars for that meeting on the website as soon as we can, so that people have plenty of time to figure it out, don't you think?
Yep. Put that out.
And are you going to put something on the listserv regarding the zoning regulations when it comes closer to the meeting time?
What
do you want someone else to do that?
What do you mean, just like, just an,
so a reminder, you know, and these are the things that have changed, and
sure,
we really would like you to come in here or
sure,
give us a book, something along those lines?
Yep, I'll do that.
That would be great.
I would add, when we're advertising for the Zoom connection, just make a note in there of if you have a less than ideal internet connection, that if they want to be able to fully participate, that it's probably better that they use the call-in number, because they'll have a better connection over their phone line. They won't be able to see anybody or be seen, but they will at least be able to hear more clearly.
What a lot of people do is they join both by phone and just...
That's
just
probably the better way to do it.
Yep.
That way, if the video cuts out, they still have the audio.
Exactly.
Okay. Scott made a motion to adjourn. I don't think he got a second.
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 All those in favor? Are we in unanimous?
Yep.
Aye. Yep.
We're unanimous. We're done. Thank you very much.
Have a good night.
Okay. Good night. Stay safe.